listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Hello and welcome to TOEFOP. This is a very special TOEFOP. Doing it in someone else's studio. It feels very nice and it's very fancy, by the way. I got Mick Molloy and Titus O'Reilly here. They have a new podcast. What's your podcast called?
Well, we've got an overarching. We're like you.
Yes, you've rebranded.
We've rebranded.
You're rebranding a podcast.
Bizarre with yes. Mick Molloy and Titus O'Reilly, and then we have two major shows, which is Sports Bizarre, which is our ongoing one, and then a new one, Animal Bizarre.
Yeah, so the brand, we'll go top down.
We can show you a brand overall hierarchy. Brand,
what's the brand hierarchy? Where do we start? What's the general brand position? What's the connective tissue?
Bizarre. You look up Bizarre.
It's Bizarre Things.
That's it. Yeah. This is the Bizarre Empire. So if it was a crime family,
and you'd be the Bizarre.
You know, the Bizarre would be at the top, and then it'd break off into two underneath, and one would be Sports Bizarre, and the other would say
they're like the capos.
The capos, they're like exactly right.
This one
is Animal Bizarre, the new kid on the block.
Okay, so firstly, in the dynamic, say like we start with crime family. In the dynamic of the crime family, who's who out of the two of you? Say you're the two godfathers at the top of the crime family. Who's handling what aspects of the business?
I'm Fredo. Mick will one day have me shot. Spoiler alert, but Mick will one day have me shot in a boat.
And I'm Uncle Junior from The Sopranos. So you work it out from there.
So Animal Bizarre, is that what we're talking?
Yeah, well, that's a new one, yeah.
Okay, so this is the, so like sports I think people are familiar with, but where's the animal, like is this bizarre animal story?
It started off. Is something I get preoccupied with on the radio show,
And
you can't
stories.
Do it in long form. So we'll come up with a story, or we'll get on talk to Chris Brown, and I'll ask him vexing questions about a particular animal. It's all done and dusted in 3 minutes, but we end up talking for an hour and a half or whatever on the said topic. So the animal kingdom, as far as I'm concerned, never disappoints. If you dig deep, whatever aspect of their lives you're talking about will generally deliver.
What's fascinating to you about, like, I mean, what's your number one most fascinated animal kingdom?
Well, so it depends on what aspect. So look at the sexual
behavior.
Animals. Well, I've always said this. Yeah, but there's a Jared Diamond who wrote Guns, Germs, Steel and is an incredible academic, also wrote a book called The Joy of Sex, The Fun of Sex, and it's all about the animal kingdom. And it just, I just laughed and smiled from start to finish.
Yeah.
Like of the animal kingdom, so what they'll do when it comes to sex, they all have their own way of attracting the opposite sex. So if you're a baboon and you're in heat, your ass will go bright red.
Uh-huh.
And that'll be a clear indicator to males of the species that I'm good to go.
We're on, game on.
Yep. So sure. I always argue, wouldn't it be great if females...
Similar?
I always go, imagine if girls had a little tail and then when you were talking to them, their tail wagged. You could easily, this is not dubious, but if you were sitting in a bar and you can cut through a lot of the guesswork if you go, I'm going all right here, a tail's wagging.
It would be hard to fake then too because you either then know or don't whether you're
–
No.
And they
can't
but
deny
the problem
they
is
like you.
With the tail wag is like if like also sometimes a dog can wave its tail well and it's like a little nervous. Or it's in an uncomfortable situation.
Oh, yeah, dogs can't tell. If I go up and talk to a girl at the bar and she walks away with her tail between her legs, I'm going to take that confidently as a sign that, you know, your energy would best be invested elsewhere. So that to me becomes fascinating as to whether it's a peacock who's changing its colour or whatever it is. I could talk endlessly about the virtual signalling or the attraction of other animals. So I have comedy animals I love. So I'll name a few and you name a few. Comedy animals off the bat. The duck.
Oh, yeah,
check.
Ducks. Yes, okay.
The duck is coming out. The donkey.
Mm-hmm.
Check. Shetland pony. Come on, the Shetland pony.
Yeah, so, no, you're right.
Look at a Shetland pony and not
you can't
burst into tears.
No, you're right.
It's got that small horse complex, which is great. The wombat.
Oh,
The wombat.
You think so?
I do. Yeah. Did you know the
wombat? Do you think that Fatso the Wombat? Oh, he was sort of he was comic relief on
is
the country.
Is there any other name for a wombat?
Than Fatso.
If you can come up with a good name for a wombat that's not Fatso, I will. And it's the only animal we're allowed to fat shame is a wombat. And did you know this? Fascinating fact. It delivers. Cubed poo.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on in there. But it is delivering. And you know what? There'll be an anthropological reason, won't there, for why it's cubed. It won't be an accident. It'll be an evolutionary miracle that for some reason the wombat is the only one.
We don't have the megafauna anymore because it would be huge.
They'd be building bricks for society, I'd imagine, though, honestly, if you had a giant wombat that was just shitting bricks.
You could make
bricks.
A house out of wombat shit.
Exactly. Very environmentally friendly, I would have thought. What about you, Titus? What's your fascination with the animal world?
We always with Sports Bazaar, the original thing was to sort of find the funny in these stories that you just wouldn't believe are true, you know. So every story we do, it's like you would, if you told someone it, they would instantly go, that can't be true. And then you go, no, it would be actually true. And so we found that in sports there's a lot, but then Mick would always tell me these stories. He'd like, and it's weekly, there's stories in every bit of animals that I'd go, that cannot be a true story. And you go, no, it is. Look, here is it's in the New York Times or it's in the, you know, and you just go, like, you know, I mean, some of the ones he remember telling me is like, you know, penguins that need to be taken in at the zoo because it was too cold outside. And
that's a true story.
You know,
it was too cold for the penguins, so at night they had to be brought
because they had become acclimatized.
There are penguins.
The first world penguins.
We think of penguins
that don't go in the cold.
They don't like the cold.
Yeah, so there's all these ones that you just don't know.
They come from the Antarctic.
What are you talking about?
What do we build? Little lug boots?
Yeah.
little lug boots for walking
outside. Coat.
A penguin, again, another comedy animal.
Penguins definitely are comedy animals.
So there you go. Now, there's a story we could talk about. It's too cold for the penguins at the zoo. We need to bring them indoors at night.
Yeah.
You have one job as a penguin. Hang out in the cold. That is what you are laboratory built to do. If you give up on that, I don't understand.
I like it though. Like the idea of the warm. Where is the warmest weather penguin? I would like to know. Is there a penguin on the Gold Coast? I'm not thinking a heap, but is there one who's just like, I like it here.
This is
more my temperature.
Yeah, I wonder if penguins ever go. Actually, it's nicer here. Yeah. Like they never don't have to live here anymore.
There's rocks everywhere, mate. Yeah. There's rocks and water everywhere.
Yeah, we don't need to live here at all.
It's cold here.
What's this bright ball in the sky? How long has this been going on? Let's do that.
But yeah, we just found, and the funny thing is every time, the more we've recorded a bunch of these because we just kept finding ones that make, and they make us laugh because they're just silly, but the more we read, the more we realize a lot of it is about human and animal interaction.
Okay. It's when they meet.
It's when we meet up with animals and how unaccustomed we are to dealing with them. You know, it's the civilized world versus the wild world where we just have things. So we have ones like where one of my favorites is a man was fleeing in the Amazon some killer bees. Uh-huh. And dove into a lake to get away and got eaten by piranhas.
Oh, yeah.
So we talked for ages about.
Piranha is a comedy animal.
What do you want to be?
Without a doubt, piranha is a comedy.
If you're going to get killed by an animal, what animal do you want it to be?
Piranha.
Like, there's not.
Killer bee. Chase
lion.
By piranha.
There's lions and snakes. If you're going to go, how are you going to go?
I mean, that is incredible, isn't it? That just. Like even just that image of going, I'm away. Oh no, this is worse.
killer bee. So you're being chased by killer bees. Now what's you gonna do? You're gonna be stung
to death.
To death
by killer bees.
Or you jump in to escape the killer bees and you get eaten by piranha. It's either or. It's a clear cut decision for you.
Piranha.
Piranha every time.
Yeah, every time.
You know, interesting side note, Mick Jagger used to put bees on his penis so they would sting it and it would make his penis.
Is that a fact we know?
But didn't Keith Richards write that in his book?
He said He had his tiny penis. But I'm going off the grid here and saying, I've heard this.
So you've added a little bit of information.
We also say, we make an effort saying don't.
Not killer bees.
Don't
though,
fact
right?
check us.
Don't fact check us.
Imagine killer bees just, on your penis. What a way to go. Yeah. Yeah. How would you?
Well, the reason his penis was so small was that he tried it with piranhas the first time around.
He'd just been nibbling it like corn on the cob. So, again, it was a good question I liked. If you had to be killed by an animal. Yeah. Okay, crocodile or shark?
Oh, okay, interesting. Yeah, this is good. I like this. Crocodiles, sometimes they'll death roll you, won't they, and then take you down the bottom for a while.
And they'll keep you. They'll actually take you under an undersea shelf and leave you there till their tummy's rumbling.
Yeah.
Shark, not so much. It's all over pretty.
You know what? I think I'm going to go with the crocodile. I like the idea of being savoured as a meal when it feels like it rather than like a crime of opportunity. Like you know? Like it doesn't feel with the shark. But, it doesn't,
so you're
feel,
a treat.
Doesn't feel special. But
you want
like,
a personal relationship.
Like with the crocodile, I feel like it'll be like, what do I want tonight? And then it like swims down there. It's like, oh, yeah, that'll
it's
be
like
nice.
A slow cooking event. Yeah. Like a big event. Yeah. You can't punch a crocodile on the nose, though, and escape.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Oh, no, you can't escape. No, you can't escape.
I'm not going to escape. Like, I mean, let's be honest. Even in knowing a way to escape is not going to enable me to escape. So you said something interesting just before we got into that, though, which was you asked for no fact checking. Is this what I'm saying? This is not necessarily the most scientific of all podcasts. Is that what we're – is there a disclaimer of sorts? Is that what we're saying?
We do disclaim, but we also like – we do regularly come back, and we do this with our other one. People come back and – we do bonus episodes too where we talk about anything.
Yeah.
Mick regularly brings up topics and I think that just is not true. Yeah. I think he's – and we get them fact-checked, often by the audience or our producer, Sarah. And he's right more often than not, like on things like – he told me once, he said, you know, we talked – Stephen Hawking came up in discussions.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, yeah, mad for strip clubs, Stephen Hawking. And I thought, that cannot be true. Totally true. Yeah, he used to take his nurse and his whole staff down there.
Wait until you hear about a little island he was visiting quite regularly.
So after Mick tells me that, I'd learn.
Has anyone been prosecuted, by the way?
I hear all that come out all the time. I'm like, that hasn't been come out like officially. Like no one, like Mick said, no one's been charged, right?
What I love is the funniest thing about like these tidbits of information, because we had this recently on an episode of TOEFOP where Charlie and I were talking about we did a 3-episode arc where we went deep on the idea of whether Michael Flatley had to have sex immediately after coming off stage or not,
because
there is no evidence on the internet of that being a real thing, and we couldn't work out whether it was just something that we'd heard Mick and Tony talk about on the radio, and that's why we all – because we would ask people and people would be like, yeah, and then we would be like, well, you're not going to believe this, but there is no – anyway, it turns out it is true. But it's like the smallest – it came from like a British tabloid, got picked up as a one-line thing in an introduction of like, 60 Minutes or something, but somehow through the fact that you would not stop using this as a joke, in Australia, it is so part of our national narrative that anytime someone mentions Michael Flatley, there's a percentage of Australians who go, oh, he used to have sex immediately after he got on stage.
It took us weeks to get to the heart of that.
So like Michael Flatley's Jesus and he's like one of the 4 disciples going out and writing the gospel.
Remember he was going to take up boxing? I remember thinking at the time he'll have great footwork. but also too, how hard would it be to hit? Because his belt would be up here. Remember he used to wear his pants up around here? I'm going, oh, it's an unfair advantage.
Not very used to like using his arms.
It's going to be a little by size. Boogada, 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 boogada. He's wide open. That's true.
Having sex with the grid girls in between rounds from what I've heard. But yeah, it turned out, he has made, self-financed, wrote, directed and starred in a film where he was like a James Bond style character. Like a proper –
have we seen this?
It is released, like it's hard to track down, but it was like a –
have you tracked it down?
We did. I mean, we went way too deep on Michael Flatley and everything that Michael Flatley's been doing in order to try and answer. But this is – sometimes I think this with Mick, because I've listened to Mick like spout all these little tidbits over the years. Yeah. I'm like, how much of this is real or how much of this is I remember it from Mick telling me that this is
I always say, I know I've got to this point with him. One, I believe, it's easier to believe because more often than not they turn out to be true. I also have this.
We need Mickipedia, which is next to Wikipedia, which is like.
Slightly.
Here's
what
Mick reckons about this topic.
So, I'm in the neighborhood.
The other thing is the only person I know that can tell a story, right? And as he's telling the story, he'll mention in passing, because he's not really a name dropper. Like, it's only if it, like, but he'll mention in passing, I was doing this function, I was doing this, or I was at this vet pub or something, and I was sitting next to, and whoever he says next, I just believe it no matter who it is. So it could be a Nobel Peace Prize winning. It could be the president. It could be like
Jeffrey
Dahmer. It could be a porn star. Yeah, it could be a gangster. Like the stories he just tells, like you've got one about watching Trump win the election with you and Joe Hockey.
Oh, with Joe Hockey. I know this.
Yeah. That was on where he's like, yeah, as you are.
Well, I wasn't allowed in.
He wasn't allowed in the embassy
in Washington. I did. It's the only time I've ever done, do you know who I am? To the guy on the gate. He's had to go and get Joe
Hockey. Shannon
Knoll
at the Crazy Horse in Adelaide. Did you hear that? He tried to couldn't get into the strip club.
Mate, he
said, don't you know who I am? And the crowd started singing, what about me?
You know how sometimes, and I'm sure you've experienced this over the years, if you've had some sort of like public feud with someone or like made a big joke about someone or whatever, you are updated on news about them for the rest of there's not anything Shannon Knoll has done in his career since he wanted to fight me for a joke that I made that someone has not sent me.
He wanted to fight you.
Oh, yeah. I made a poor joke. It actually was a shitty joke I shouldn't have made. But he went on Kyle and Jackie O's show and like challenged me to a public boxing match. And I didn't make it better because I said,
got Michael Flatley to train you.
Well, I said, you seem very fit, Shannon. Like I said, can't you challenge me to something that we are both equally bad at? And so I said, singing, which he did not.
Oh, so you doubled down.
That felt like the right thing to do at the time. But it turns out that throwing petrol on that fire did not make the fire go out.
No, I made a shitty joke about him once that it was just an easy joke to make. And then we ended up on a gig together where it all worked out fine. But I was at the Grand Prix and I said, it's amazing. You know, the first time I've been there and everyone's walking around with their earphones in with the, what do you call it?
Earplugs.
Earplugs. I said, not for the racing, it's just that Shannon Knoll scheduled to sing the national anthem. And anyway, I think word got back. And when I met him, we were doing a corporate together. He was understandably frosty.
We broke bread.
It was nothing personal. It was just, I would have said
it's a good gag.
It's a good gag. That's good material, even now.
Yeah, even now. It still works. Yeah. Holds up.
What about?
No, but it's interesting, like, because I ended up having to sit down with him.
Sorted it out.
But it is one of those things where you forget sometimes as a comedian that we don't think of the jokes. Like we think of them all so lightly and so flippantly. And, you know, have you ever had one of those people who like just you're like, I can't even really remember even saying that. And you've been holding on to that thing for so long. And you're like, so sometimes I do. I won't go into the details of this, but I had somebody ring me. I wrote a column, like I used to write this Sunday column, and it had a joke about this particular person who worked in entertainment who had my number, and they rang me and it was Sunday. I guess
you're in church.
My guess is that they had not gone to bed, like, you know what I mean? My guess is that they had had a big night and then read the Sunday paper and then seen this it was one of those shitty, when you're doing a topical news, I mean, Titus, of all people, you kind of know what this is like.
No, I've never made fun of anyone.
Well, you know that classic thing of like when you're doing that weekly kind of pithy trying to come up with a liner. Like it was about a cancellation of a TV show and I had a joke in my thing about it, my back being painful and compared it to like watching the – like you know what I mean? It was one of those sort of just classic sort of narky sort of like jokes. Not the greatest joke in the world but not – anyway, this guy is like having like a real crack. Like go at me and I'm like, oh man, like you work in a similar industry. Like, you got to understand that, like, it's nothing personal. It was just, yeah, like, my thing's about the week.
I had to go for it.
That was one of the stories of the week.
It was sitting there. And don't take it personally.
Yeah, but don't you think also comedians, though, all bag each other all the time to eat their faces? Like, whenever I see Sam and Mick warming up for the front bar, they get start 2 hours before the show, they start going,
it's our love language.
Am I carrying the show tonight again? And they're into each other, like, you know, and everyone.
It also gets you mentally prepared for going on to live TV, so you're already a bit matched.
So you just,
you
don't really, you kind of bag, you don't take it in the same way.
Just don't think about it as being that thing. And so this was someone who works in like a related industry, let's just say, for the sake of anonymity, but someone who you would have thought might have understood that is basically what I would say. And so they said, I want to fight you right now. Right now. Like, not a celebrity boxing match.
Doesn't sound like Russell Crowe.
Shannon Noah style. Yeah, I want to fight guessing. You. I want to fight you right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
If it was Russell, I might have actually, gone just for the story, right? Like, you know?
Who's the most comical? Without saying, you can't say who it is, right? No, but who's the most comical person you could imagine it could have been?
Of all the people I've made fun of over
the
years?
Celebrities in Australia. Just, like, who would be the weirdest person you'd find to ring you up threatening? Like, Daryl Summers? Like, or who's the one that would be the weirdest person to ring up and threaten to fight you out of everyone you know?
Like,
because there's ones you suspect, like Shannon Noll doesn't surprise me.
No. Like, yeah, if like this guy's got a great sense of humor, but if someone told, like, and he actually is a guy I make jokes about all the time and he's really great about it.
Yeah.
But if someone said, oh yeah, Karl Stefanovic, like, rang me up and tried to fight me to park, at least you'd be like, oh, well, he's got park related, experience, I reckon, maybe that would happen.
You run into people and you end up at a party or a dinner table where you are with someone who you have openly made fun of is always
a bit awkward.
Yeah, that thing where you know.
A bit awkward. I know. How do you want to do it? We're just going to pretend it didn't happen? We're going to have this out on the spot. Do we need to do this? You know what I reckon we should have? And I've always argued this. Yeah. And I do it in, you know, I know the woke thing gets overplayed and all that stuff, but, you know, jokes you can and can't do now. There should be a license given to comedians, and I should get, at a dinner party, I should be able to do a joke about a certain topic that other people can't. Because people go, hang on, well, you can't say that. Go, sorry, hang on a second. I pull out my license. I go, licensed actually, comedian, I'm in control
I
of
can
this.
Say this. Yeah.
I know how.
I'm actually absolutely qualified.
I know what I'm doing.
I'm a professional. I dedicate my life to thinking about these sort of things. My opinion is well-formed. Comedic.
You can play the comedian card. Sorry.
It's like get out of jail card. It's
sorry,
like,
Carlos, but I'm playing my comedian card here. I have a right to be able to make that
sorry,
joke.
I'm not saying this as a dinner party guest. I'm officially stepping into my role as professional social.
Yeah, I'm performing. You're an audience now. See, I had one guy, you'd like this for your footy podcast, and I had a guy who's a footy, like he's an opinion commentator, right? Sure. I won't say who it was. But one time I bumped into him and I'd never made fun of him, right? Like, just wasn't – just one of those – sometimes they just not a thing. Anyway, he goes, yeah, I remember you made fun of me once. And I go, oh, I've never made fun of you. And he's like, I'm sure you have. I said, what did I say? He goes, oh, I can't remember. And I go, mate, so I actually got on Twitter and Googled his name.
To see
and
if so you no, have
I said, mate, I'm sorry, I've never bagged you. Like, and then he's like, then he was like, kind of disappointed. He was kind of disappointed. He goes, oh, really? I go, yeah. And he goes, oh, I've been telling people you're bagging me. I go, yeah, no, I've just never mentioned you one way or the other. And he was more crestfallen that I'd never mentioned him than thinking I'd bagged him.
Well, this guy who rang me up was not crestfallen. He was confident, bold, and said we should meet in a park. Now, this is, you'll love this part of the story. Mm-hmm. He says, I've picked a park that is between where we live. I thought in this moment
that's nice of him.
Overreacting to something. The fact that he had like literally gone, the best way to get him to the park is to pick one.
It's the one that suits us both.
I don't want to make this fight inconvenient to you.
What's he do, bringing a picnic blanket?
He would have been good if you'd gone, is it near a hospital? Because I'm going to need it. What's the ambulance response times like around here?
I can't wait till we get off air because that's the first name I'm going to get off you.
And where did it end with this guy? Like, are you still like? Have you got a nemesis now?
Nah,
like,
I mean, it's.
Or did he calm down and it all?
If I tell the story because it amuses me now. If I still felt bad about it, I'd tell you who it was. Yeah. If you know what I mean. Like, yeah. It's one of those things now where I don't actually almost connect. I don't even really connect the story with the person anymore, if that makes sense. Yeah, I love the story still about this guy being so mad that, like.
Can you tell us what park he picked at least? And then
we can narrow it down.
I can tell you. I can try and work out.
I can actually tell you, this is what I will tell you is.
Yes.
I only ended the conversation because he wouldn't let go of the idea that we were going to fight in a park because I kept saying to him, come on, we're not going to fight. It's not, this is not like,
yeah.
And he said, no, I'm going to fight you in the park. And so we ended with me agreeing to go to the park.
And then you didn't turn up?
No, of course. But like, right. But no, I agreed to go. So I don't know.
So he would have been waiting at the park.
To this day, the one question I would love to know is, did he go to the park? Like, I don't know if he
went. He's still there.
I don't know. But
still waiting.
Yeah.
Goes there every day, just on the off chance he'll show up.
Wow. I mean,
how old were you? Have you ever
had one like made a joke about someone who's literally never like that's it? They've like blackballed you forever.
When we were young, we used to strafe the room. Yeah. I think when we were younger, I remember going to the Logies and walking in one that year, and it was like, you know, that bar
you
room,
and
that
Tony
bar
room.
Well,
yeah.
Me and Tony, yeah. We just used to. It was just sport for us. It was nothing personal, but we used to.
Also, you're not in that world when you start.
But I remember when we got to the Logies, when literally the door opened, it was the Western Bar Room. Everyone, the pianola stops. Yeah. Everyone puts their drinks down. It was like, I'll tell you a story, and I could be too mean. We might have to beep it. No, I won't tell it.
There's a whole gamut of emotions.
You know what? I love that even more because I've never seen Mick decide not to tell a story on air. So that was something in of itself. I think your instincts are probably right if that's the case. If you've thought that, then I reckon you're probably right.
Yeah, no, I'm pulling this one.
Anyway,
so Ben Robert Smith and Taylor.
Mick told me a story once, and I'm not going to say who this was, but he once said to someone who is fairly well known, but not super famous, but said to them at a pub, might be worth just calming down a bit on the drinks. And I thought, if Mick Malloy is telling you that it's time to calm down,
you've really
gone past the few red lines.
I've got one that can raise that, and I'm pretty sure that this person who now does not live this lifestyle in any way would be absolutely fine with me telling this story because he has told it publicly before.
Yeah.
And so I don't think he'd have a problem with it. But Adam Spencer and I, when we were doing the Triple J Breakfast Show, used to tour with the Big Day Out. So basically we'd do all five shows as part of Triple J. Yeah. And that was just like,
wow.
You know, they called it, the bands used to call it the Big Day Off because it was just like a week and a half of just like party from like state to state having fun. And we just got to kind of go along and have fun with it. Brilliant times.
Yeah.
But we are at the after party in the bar at the Hilton in Adelaide. And Peter Hook from New Order comes up to Adam and says, we're going to go and get you a glass of water. And
oh, boy. Waiter, check, please.
Oh. What hotel was it? The
Hilton.
Yeah, I was at the Hilton after, and I've told Mick this story, but the Adelaide test one day, and I'd done something for Channel 7. And so after that night, it was like day two or something, that night I'm at the Adelaide Hilton bar and there's all the other Channel 7 commentators are there and stuff. And then they all have to go and commentate the next day, but I don't have anything on the next day except to go watch the cricket. So they all leave and I'm left with Brian Lara. It's just Brian Lara and me. And Brian Lara says, he's only met me an hour before, but because I've been connected in, he goes, you will be my wingman. So I was Brian Lara's wingman
for
the night, which involved me going and getting glasses of white wine every half hour while he talked to like 20 women.
One of the greatest pants men.
There I am, his wingman.
A bloke in a three-piece suit.
Which, really needed my expertise. But I learned, I'm just really fetching him white wine.
Who would have thought that the two of us we'll have a Brian Lara and Adelaide story, but I've got one as well.
You've got one as well.
So Justin Hamilton, Limo and I are doing like, this is back, like way back in the day. He's still playing cricket at this point.
Oh,
like,
right.
And he's in Adelaide. They've just played in Adelaide and we've been doing a gig at like PJ O'Reilly's or something like this, really old days of like, you know, Adelaide comedy, you know. Limo's doing his famous people having sex routine. It's the good old days.
It's the classic of the genre.
Yeah, and we are at this like whatever the bar used to be like on the main street there that was upstairs. It was like a big – anyway, we're there. Brian Lara's there. And like there's all these girls talking to us and Brian Lara is so fascinated by – why all these girls that are talking to us? Because we've just been at, like, he wants to know what's going on.
Yeah.
So Brian,
what am I
Lara,
missing here?
Yeah. Girls, basically,
he's
girls
looking at you three and going,
like, what is going on? Like,
these guys must be rich or famous.
But literally, he comes over and asks, what's going on? Because he just can't get his head around.
He's like, what's going on?
Like, why all these, like, that's literally how he introduces himself. He's like,
not computing.
Of course, I know who he is. So he, like, then buys us drinks, Brian Lara.
Yeah.
I ended up stealing the glass from the bar from Q Bar, I believe the name of the place was. I stole the glass and would drink out of it for the one that he bought me, my drinking, because I was like, this is the drink that Brian Lara bought for me.
And so I would drink DNA on it, so you can clone him.
For two like years, I reckon, I had that glass and would drink out of my Brian Lara glass.
Can I tell my Adelaide Hilton story? Yes. So there's a restaurant at the Adelaide Hilton. It was quite a highfalutin restaurant. I was there one day and there was a couple, an elderly couple sitting on the next table. And I swear this is true and I could not stop looking. For the entirety of their meal, they did not say a word to each other. And to this day, I still can't work out whether they despised each other or they are hopelessly in love and don't need to communicate. Now, that's not as good as either of your stories. But I really felt I had to contribute. I really wanted to be part of it, and that's all I came up with.
No, you've got a good Adelaide story.
Think about it. That's pretty
the entire how long?
I mean, about 2 hours.
Not
a single word. Oh. They ordered meals from the waiter, but they did not say a word to
each other. But they weren't.
I couldn't read it.
They weren't reading or on a device or
they were sitting there in silence.
Literally just sitting.
They were sitting there
in silence. Yeah, they've just been together too long.
They've been together too long. But were they happily?
See, that's Nate Bargatze. Have you seen the Nate Bargatze?
Yeah.
Any of his stand up?
I've seen all of his stand up.
So you know the one he does about the Sixth Sense?
Yes.
Which is about, you know.
Essentially, people were more willing to believe that a man. Like
his wife doesn't talk to him the whole movie.
The movie. They're more willing to believe that than he's been dead.
That he's a ghost. Because he's actually dead, but people don't even suspect that because it's just they go, hasn't talked to him all movie. It's just being married. And I reckon that's like, but you had a good Adelaide one where you met one of your former girlfriends because you reckon the pedestrian lights are too slow at Adelaide.
Well, you know, the lights take a long time.
They do take a long time.
And
that's actually a real thing, though. That's
it is a real thing. I was complaining about it all weekend until I met a girl at the traffic lights. And I was walking up to the traffic lights. So I thought, I've got this. If these lights just don't change, and
I can chat to her.
The rest is history.
That's how we met her, because of the lights.
And it was one of the great relationships until she threw an ashtray at my head through the shower curtain.
Yeah.
But apart from that,
jury's out of me.
Classic ending.
That's how it had to end.
Isn't it? what other animal things have you discovered here? I noticed you've got a list in front of you.
We find ones all the time that are just ridiculous. Like one of my favorites was there was a bear that stormed a Japanese military base.
Hang on. So what sort of bear are we talking here?
Like a brown bear.
A brown bear.
And it took the Japanese army about 6 hours to deal with it, which does make you worry.
Well, but how did they deal with it? Like when you say deal with it, do you mean?
It just ran away. They had to like all go into their barracks and hide for like ages until someone showed up being able to handle it.
So you're saying that like
until
you could
Dr.
invade,
Harry Cooper
if I'm
you could
North
invade
Korea,
Japan with
if you have like
bears.
five 5 grizzly bears.
Yeah, you could.
You can take them out.
I mean, this feels like some real Jurassic Park style thinking. It's like, no, it's always a storyline in Jurassic Park of like, we got to train these dinosaurs for the military.
If they had a bear on it, Iwo Jima, yeah, it would have been over quick sticks. Here's a story that, okay, that came out and was one of the worst moments on live TV in a long time, but Pang brought it up the other night on the front bar. I don't, you know, Kat, we're talking about what to do when you're attacked by a bear, and the way we all think about it is you don't say stay anything, still, don't move, yeah, stay silent.
That's what they say.
But he goes, no. He goes, what you do is you walk backwards, and while you're walking backwards, you keep taking items of clothing off. And as you're taking the items of clothing off, the bear eventually will be distracted by the scent of your clothing and will be distracted by your clothing, which I said, yeah, but it still leaves you naked 20 metres from the bear. And anyway, that conversation sadly went on for about 5 minutes on national TV, live. it's a fascinating, what would you do if you're attacked by a bear?
I think Sam's winding you up there.
He's adamant that that's what you do.
I have heard that the walking backwards slowly thing, I'd never heard the take off your clothes.
To be honest, that's a big call. Sam's reaction to every situation.
Take off your clothes.
They have incredible sense.
He's like Harvey Weinstein. Not since Harvey Weinstein.
That's what you should have done with Shannon.
I don't think Harvey was doing enough backing away. I think that was the issue.
And then I would say I was going to back it up, but I thought we're already in trouble here. But with the zebra fact, why is the zebra black and white in the middle of a jungle? Answer me that. So most animals, it's a camouflage. Your colours, whether it's spots or it's stripes or your whatever, you're trying to blend in. What the hell is black and white doing in the middle of a jungle?
So what do we know the answer to this?
I do. Well, I've got a theory. we're going to have to fact check it.
Okay. I'm getting the vibe of this.
So,
Most
predators of predators of the zebras have to identify the actual animal.
Yeah.
So when a pack of zebras gets together, all you're looking at is a massive mass of black and white, and they can't determine that it's an animal. So they go away, which is bad news for the one zebra. he's a little late to the party or not there.
Yeah.
See, there's a reason. Nature will give you a reason or we will.
Nature will give you a reason or we will. Is that the slogan for the podcast?
One of my favourites we had was it was New Year's Eve and this was in Holland and it was a little harbour town and they were going to have fireworks and then this walrus shows up.
Yeah.
And it gets up on the pier there around the harbour and so they come out and say, we can't do the fireworks because there's a walrus there. So this all the town say, well, instead we'll light candles and we'll come down and watch the walrus and bring all the kids down and for New Year's Eve we'll do that instead of the fireworks and watch a bit of nature. So the whole town gathers and they're getting ready for New Year's only for the walrus to proceed to furiously masturbate for the next hour.
Change their plans, shelve the fireworks, bring the kids, and let's go down and honour nature at its finest. Cut to
an hour is impressive.
Didn't even have Pornhub or anything. That's all from memory.
You know what turns it on? Crowds of humans. So the more that would come down, the more that it would mess it.
I like when you watch.
Who knows? Walrus, comedy animal? I think it might be.
Yeah, I reckon the walrus is.
It's like, up there.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So how many animals are we going through? What are we learning about it?
We might be doing three stories in an
each
episode.
How does it work?
How does this actual show work?
Works are doing a lot of work.
What's your point?
What are you trying to do here? What's the grift?
Usually we found a few stories each and we tell each other.
David Attenborough's dickhead brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Having a laugh. Uh-huh. So you'll bring a story, I'll bring a story. I'll tell each other. You mightn't have heard of, and then you'll go, what about the
crypto investing hamster?
Then you probably know about a little bit about each other. That doesn't surprise me. That feels very on brand for crypto, I've got to be honest with you.
Happy
to trust the hamster more than most of the bros I meet at a party who want to tell me about crypto.
So we love when animals get revenge on humans.
Okay,
so like there was a guy who raised, I think it was in France, he raised like roosters to cockfighting, and they often put the blades on their feet, and the rooster cut his artery and he died. And we were like,
I mean, that's good solid stuff.
No one felt a lick of sympathy for that guy.
Do you know what I'd do at the cockfight? I'd turn up with an emu.
An emu?
Well, a big bird. Just go, what?
I mean, emus. Emus will fuck you up too.
Yeah. Ostrich. Turn up with a. Yeah. Oh, no, what's the other one that can kill you?
The cassowary.
Cassowary. You take a cassowary to
a cassowary. And you go, what's wrong? What? No.
Well, Australia lost a war to the emus, didn't we? There was the famous emu war. Yep.
We lost a war to the emus. That's pretty bad.
Rob, wasn't like John Cleese coming to Australia to make a movie about that? Was it like Rob Schneider and John Cleese coming into Australia and make
a movie? I feel like that was a real missed opportunity that didn't get made.
Okay, so this is the new podcast. This is the animal podcast.
Yeah.
For people who don't know the original podcast, we're talking, it's the very similar thing, but like through the prism of sports, which is, I guess, what people would know. Like, Titus, if people know you, particularly from the AFL world, predominantly first and foremost, and like through, the world of sport, and of course, Mick, you've always had a long association with like loving sports and being
enthusiastic amateur
in the sporting world.
Yep. So this is slightly different. I need to probably talk on.
Could you speak on behalf of the. Yeah, could
because
you?
Because this is different. He goes away and does a deep dive, reads 8 books, and comes back and unearths a story that I've never heard of before. And we do this silly thing in this country where we'll do a story about Bradman, or we'll know a couple of basics, or Walter Lindrum or whatever. But there's that many interesting stories on that second tier that go on beyond our notice that are incredible. And he goes and finds them and brings them up to speed, and they are literally. I am essentially human ballast. I'm asking the odd question and pointing them in the right direction. But these are all, some of them are I believe, how many episodes have we done?
Almost 100.
I reckon half of them could be films. I mean, half of them could be the first bloke who started the Melbourne Cup, young Griffo, the first boxer who had to be released from jail to fight and then put back in jail. I mean, there's 100 of them, I think.
What's your favourite story, Titus, of the one? Like, if say, for example, as Mick said, that you like somebody came and said, we've got $10 million and we want to make a film on one of these stories, but you've got to tell us which one it is. What's the best story, you reckon?
So we do all sports around the world, so there's a lot. But if you're doing Australian stories.
Yeah, let's go Australian.
To make it, there's probably 3 that jump out to me that just are like old, but Fine Cotton, where some guys swapped a horse, didn't look like the original horse they'd dyed it and painted it.
You have to wait for a few people to die
this one.
That's
problematic. Yep, but that's
another
good
one. Young Griffo, he was this guy who was our first ever world champion in sport, in boxing, and he literally led a street gang in Sydney in the Rocks when the Rocks was the toughest place. Police wouldn't go into the Rocks in Sydney. It had bubonic plague in 1890s in there, and he came out of that world to become the world champion. But he never boxed sober in his entire career. He never fought. So they would often wake him up in a bar in the morning and take him to the ring to fight. Ned Kelly watched him fight, all that sort of stuff. So he's done. But probably the most one that I just can't believe isn't like more well-known is a guy called Frederick Standish. So Frederick Standish, we've done a whole episode on this, but to paraphrase it, he was an aristocrat, fled London, being chased for debts, gambling debts, lands in Australia on the gold fields, sells illegal grog on the gold fields, asks a mate who's come out from England for a job, becomes police commissioner. He's only a year before being selling illegal grog, is Burke and Wills' commanding officer, carries Wills' coffin, then creates the Melbourne Cup, is the inventor of the Melbourne Cup, lives in the Melbourne Club, gets into jewels, all sorts of things, takes Prince Albert when he comes out from overseas to a brothel, and does a whole bunch of stuff like this. I'm paraphrasing massively a bunch of
other stuff. I'm auditioning for the role of Standish.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Then, exactly. Then he's in charge of the hunt for Ned Kelly, which he spectacularly mishandles, and is why Ned Kelly's on the run for several years, just because of that. And then they find out the reason he's police kitchen for 20 years, despite massive corruption, all this stuff going off. He stops the hunt for Ned Kelly because he has to go and look after the drawing of the barrier for the Melbourne Cup. So he's doing all this sort of stuff.
This is all true.
They find out massive corruption. So he basically has a list from every brothel in Melbourne every night of who's been in them. So every time they try and get him, he has three royal commissions examining him, and he basically can blackmail the entire thing. Now, no one tells this story. It's like
– it's incredible.
It's better than any American story.
That is
like,
such a great story.
And there's like 40 little sub things. Yes. Like he gets in a duel and thrown through the window of the Millman cab out onto the street.
It's interesting. Like, so,
you just never hear that story,
So glad there's a place for it, because, I mean – Michael Chamberlain, who you'd both know, did an incredible show about the history of Australian rules football. And the stories of Tom Wills.
Unbelievable.
The amount of things. He was like Australia's Forrest Gump. Like every time really there was a major event, happened to be there in it.
He stabbed himself to death.
Yes, it's
he did that. Took the first Indigenous side overseas. Just an incredible.
Like the places he was at rugby school when rugby was event. All these sort of like – Incredible stories about Australia. So
they always teach you that Australian history is boring, right, when you're growing up. And then the more, I've written about this, and Mick and I are in this podcast, and then the more you delve into all the bits of it, you realise, there's corruption, it's boring because of how we tell it.
Yes.
Not it's boring. Even the stuff about – the frontier wars, which we never heard of when we were probably all growing up.
Yes.
People would say, it's boring, there was no civil war, no invasion. You go, yeah, there was all that stuff. We just don't tell you about it. Like, moral things aside, in terms of just interesting, in terms of high drama and craziness.
And stories about what actually happened.
Yeah,
also.
What actually happened are just bonkers. But, all these guys, they're all like going to brothels, they're all corrupt police taking money.
Well, of course
money, all
they
this.
Were.
And but
because that's what... It's everyone exactly. was doing.
Yeah.
It was the style at the time.
It was the style at the time. Yes. But you just get this stuff. And so we just find that stuff. I mean, we find ones with Sports Bazaar around the – we do global ones. I mean, we did three on table tennis because there was this guy that was like the Forrest Gump of the world. He met Mao, Stalin and Churchill. He was the guy who invented table tennis. He was like – he was a Russian spy. But we've done other ones. Like we had two New York Yankees pitchers. And this gives you a flavour of what these stories are like, who got up in the 70s and announced they were teammates. They announced that there was going to be a media conference about a trade. So all the media show up. And these two guys are two big stars in New York. New York Yankees, no bigger team in America. They got up and everyone, media were like, okay, what's the trade? And they go, we're here to announce we're trading wives, children and even our dogs. They swapped wives and kids and their dog. And one of the teammates goes, I can understand swapping your wife, but your dog? But that's a true story, right?
I mean, at least the wife might have some agency in the decision, whereas the dog.
That's a true story.
It really does.
Like we would say, who broached that subject originally out of the forum?
It's got a lot to...
There's a lot of layers.
There's a lot. Yeah. Got to ease your way into that conversation, you would have thought.
Yeah, you don't want to be the one guy that goes, hey, guys, I was just thinking, what if we swap wives? And the other three are like, what?
Yeah, I reckon the dog's been added on.
Oh, by random. You know,
I reckon they've like.
It's like a true trade. Like, I'll throw in the kids and the dog.
You can get both the dogs. Ned Kelly. Yes. I was just going to circle back on Ned Kelly for a second because I stopped in on Glen Rowan. When was the last time you went to Glen Rowan for a visit?
I was there a couple of years ago.
Well, they put a freeway in now. That's right. You don't stop there anymore, which is sad because, they built a town around
good
the antics
up
of
there.
Changed the nature of the town from my small experience that it's not on the main street. So, like, when I drove into town, clearly on a time that wasn't on their regular – You know, like when you're like, you've come to town where like they're only really existing for when the tourists come in.
Yes.
They weren't really expecting one lone tourist to come into town, and everybody just kind of like stops and pays extra attention to the fact that you were in town. So I popped down to the Ned Kelly, you know, sort of gift shop and museum down there. Yes. And it's a couple of things that I've noticed is
Take away.
I mean, I know that both of you obviously want to know where you can buy a brand new Gollywog, it turns out.
Oh, can you? Okay.
Yeah, that's
it's so much more convenient than having to order it online on the dark web.
That's right. No, you can get a.
So there's 1932.
There's a whole rack of them that you can get there. A whole rack.
Oh, well, Jeff Kennett was the and you didn't president bring me back of that one? Club.
I can't believe it.
I can show you a photo that I took, and then I can show you the soft Ned Kelly helmet that I bought to cover the fact that I'd just taken that photo because I thought they were going to stab me.
Oh, boy.
And then the other thing, ironically, that Ned Kelly, I guess they've tapped into the whole he was for freedom and, you know, he's often been associated with that idea of, like, being anti-authority.
Yeah, the one
most criminals are.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind
you don't meet many criminals that implicit. Are like, I've got a real
respect for authority and rules of law and order. In general, outside my criminal activities. Well, it turns out has been appropriated by the anti-masking movement, which I thought was brave.
What do you mean?
For a guy who's predominantly famous for wearing a mask.
The anti-masking movement?
Yeah. A lot of Ned Kelly merchandise that is like all about not
he would
a
not
mask.
Have worn a mask.
Like,
yeah, it's not the first you leap to.
No.
Great.
Thank you so much for joining us on
our stupid behavior.
I really appreciate it. If there's going to be, I do want to know though, if there's going to be a third spin-off, if we've done sport, we've done animals. If there was going to be like a third area of the bizarre that it becomes, what would be the
politics?
Like,
would be good. Yeah, we've often talked about politics,
and crime.
We might do a small series with the American elections coming up.
What's your feeling in your waters, in your Mick Malloy waters?
I think he can get back in. Apart from watching Trump get elected at the Australian Embassy in Washington on that night and seeing him sweep the board and everyone in a state of apoplexy, I think I watched Bill Maher the night before in New York at Madison Square Garden, and he goes, no, I'm just letting you know there's a real chance this guy's going to get up. And in New York, which was 92% Democrats, everyone laughed their heads off. I'm telling you, there's something going on in America that overrides logic, racism, it overrides everything. And it is, he's our guy. And it's because it's anonymous and you don't know who's doing it. It doesn't matter whether you're religious or
whether you're big business
or whether you've got so many factions over there that no one will admit to it, but he could. The most bizarre election in the history of the Western world is two old dinosaurs going head to head. It tells you everything you need to know about America, and there's going to be trouble either way. So
it's the least inspiring, aside from Australian elections.
Well,
it is just there is just
so that'd be a good one. Right.
It's just totally bonkers. It's who knows who's going to win.
What do you
one.
Feel? Like, I like your opinion on this. What do you feel about the America? Like, do you think there is are you with Mick that you think there's a possibility that Trump will get up?
Oh, there's I mean, I think it's a coin toss.
Really?
A coin toss.
Or a coin toss.
Yeah, or a coin toss. It's a total, because it comes down to a few basically battleground
states. People on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
If they bump it up like they did with Bush. Uh-huh. But in the end, in that election, 9 people got to vote in America. Mm. You know, this is the hanging chad election.
But it happened in
They'll do it again if they have to.
Was it 1876 or something, the centenary? They've had numerous elections that have come down to being basically stolen because of the gerrymandering, all the nonsense that goes on there is, you know. And the thing is about America, my theory on America is it's got the greatest arable land in the world, you know, farming land in the world. It's a net exporter now of oil. Because of fracking, it's got this huge educated workplace or no amount of money. It's protected its borders, everything like that. It's so well off that it doesn't actually need good government, and it never is really worried about having good government because it just always will do well, and it will continue to do well. Yeah, you watch; it's got no natural threats. It's not like it's in Europe. It just it's like
the rich will rake the till.
Yeah, it just
and the poor will keep voting for the Republicans.
Yeah, it's never needed it. It doesn't value it. It's not. It doesn't need it. It's got no scarcity. There's no scarcity.
Never heard an answer that had arable land in it that really convinced me quite as much as that one.
It's
did.
All about the arable
where,
land.
Where do people find your podcast? Like people want to listen to them right now. Where do they find them?
So everywhere you get your podcast, Bizarre with Mick Molloy and Titus O'Reilly. It's on. We're on your Apple, your Spotify, listener, everywhere. So.
But all of it under Bizarre.
All under Bizarre. So one feed, like you, we're, you know, making it easy for the people.
Thank you for doing the show.
Boys. Thank you for the opportunity. Cheers.